Hey, it's Elisa Monjadas, Managing Director of Stories Bureau, and this is my co-host, Creative Director of Stories Bureau.
Hey, everyone, I'm Corey Grushka, and this is B2B Creatively, where we want to talk about all things B2B creative, from trends to best practices, campaigns that succeeded.
So that all of us together can learn how to B2B creatively.
If you're a marketer, you'll learn how to be more creative, and if you're a creative, we're going to make you more strategic. Elisa?
Hey.
So our guest today is, I think, undoubtedly going to lead us into a conversation in part around events and event strategy, because she has a big event coming up. So my opening question for you today is, you were a VP of marketing at a large tech firm. I know you kicked around the idea of having your own event or event series, and I don't know if you ever executed on that, if it made sense. But what was your calculus like in terms of deciding between going big on a variety of industry events versus hosting your own kind of brand event?
I think when you're an outsider in a company, it's like you should everything should be owned by your company and you should put these on. It makes you an authority in the space. But for us at the time that we were in, we wanted it, but it just didn't make sense to do our own events. Like, I really wanted a client summit. I think client summits are a fabulous way to retain your current clients. We've done some for our clients, and you can make them small and intimate, or these huge like trade shows for your clients. I love them, but it just, at the time we were in, where we had just acquired about 7 companies, we were merging them all. And we were still getting our footing in like who we were as a brand. And so we made the decision at that time, instead of holding our own, to just have a bigger presence and do a bigger splash at other industry events. So I never actually did them, but I did a ton of research around them and pushed as hard as I could with our CMO and our C and the rest of our leadership. Like, I think at the end of the day, it really depends on what your company goals are and what's right for you. It's not always a budget decision. It's sometimes, in our case, it was more of a branding and positioning.
And the size decision. Of the business, obviously. And our guest today is has the scale to be able to pull them off in a very meaningful way.
Yeah. Okay. So let me give a little background about our guest. This is Mia. Everybody meet Mia.
But hey, everyone.
We met each other when we were in Fresno working at an advertising agency. And she was a social media person. She eventually became a media buyer. And then she moved to LA and she's just been like a big deal ever since. So, and we're friends.
You give me too much credit.
My brother, my family. So Mia, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Mia Villarreal, Product Marketing Manager for VMware Tanzu at Broadcom. VMware Tanzu is a platform that developers and engineers use to run their applications on any cloud or any device. I've started off, you know, doing digital marketing and pivoted into product marketing because I wanted to be closer to the revenue generating side of the business. So I've really liked that pivot in my career and love that I can work across all these different stakeholders every day and create products from the ground up, from scratch, and see them come to fruition through these major product launches and events. So really excited to talk about some of the events that I planned in the past and have coming up here soon.
That's so awesome. Congratulations. It's like on all your achievements. I'm curious to know what your day-to-day is. Like, what does it mean to be a product marketing manager?
Yeah, it is definitely something that is continuing to evolve, like as I progress in my career, and is different at every organization I'm finding. In our current org, we're really like at the center of every single product launch. We're pretty much like the liaison between product managers who actually like own the product roadmap, decide on the features that make it into each product release and things like that. And then we're also you know, the folks that work with all of the branding and the marketing folks that put together all the content. So in my usual day-to-day, I'm creating a lot of the content that then we put into like this overall marketing plan. And then we come up with the strategy behind, okay, how do we repurpose a lot of this to be able to use it across all of our different marketing channels, from social media, which I have the background in, so I get to lend a lot of that experience to what I do now, but also all the different digital marketing channels, from like email, lead gen to demand generation and things like that. And then I also lead a lot of our customer content as well through webinars, podcasts, blogs as well. So it's really like you get to touch so many different cool pieces of the business. And I really like that it's constantly evolving and you have to keep on your toes with what the latest trends are as well to stay, you know, up to speed with what your competition is doing as well.
Our producer in your pre-pro call, you all talked about the acquisition and the fact that you've kind of been integrated into Broadcom, which is a massive enterprise, and it's a different, I guess, environment for you? Or I guess, is it a different environment for you? What's it like kind of post-acquisition managing and operating in that environment?
Yeah, so before the acquisition, VMware was its own standalone company, and it was very focused around the multi-cloud and towards like enterprise customers. Now that we're under the Broadcom company, the goals have shifted a little bit to now be more inclusive of, okay, we have Broadcom as this overall chip manufacturer and maker. How do we leverage some of that customer base to now share what that means from like a software perspective? Now you can leverage like the install customer base to talk about like VMware Tanzu and how you can take those applications and merge them and migrate them over to like this new modern app platform. So Broadcom really didn't have like a software piece of the business. So with the acquisition, we were kind of the ones that came in and said, hey, this is like all the cool new shiny stuff that you're now able to do as this like overall encompassing umbrella, because now we're along the lines of Symantec, CA Technologies, and the other companies that are now under Broadcom. So we're now the software piece of the business, I like to think of it as.
You at Tanzu, you're effectively a line of business within VMware, which is now the SaaS arm broadly of Broadcom. There are, I take it, a bunch of other lines of business within VMware similar to Tanzu in different verticals and in different areas?
Yes, that's correct. There's VMware Cloud Foundation, which is one of our tentpole products and solutions. vSphere is a big one of those. That was what was one of like our core products back in the day when VMware was launched 20 years ago now. So it's been around for a while now, and now they're on version 10. So it's really cool to see how much innovation has happened across all those years. We also have a digital workspace product. So this is like if you were using, you know, a laptop and you needed to onboard new employees and they were all remote, our digital workspace solutions are able to do that really easily and seamlessly. So that was huge when we were going through the pandemic and a lot of folks couldn't even get laptops shipped to them. So VMware Horizon was one of the products that made like a digital virtual workspace on your own personal laptop. So it's the same thing that goes for if you need to use one of those apps on your phone to do like double verification to make sure you're not a hacker trying to get into, you know, your laptop, you got to do the double verification. So a lot of those products are also under VMware as well.
So you have this event coming up, VMware Explorer in November in Barcelona. What's happening over there to plan it out?
It's very busy right now. It really, like the planning really starts, I'd say, in May or June, when we're like, okay, it's time to get ramped up. And we call it, you know, the busy period of the year. So we have two events that happen within VMware. We have VMware Explorer Vegas, which used to be called VMworld for years. And then 2 years ago, they rebranded it to be VMware Explorer. So this is a 4-day event happening in Vegas. We have another one focused on EMEA customers and attendees in the European region happening in November 4th through the 7th. And that's also very similar content, but we use the first one in Vegas as really like the big launch. And then Barcelona is like, hey, here's all the other cool and innovative product releases that we could talk about now. So really the events focused on more of like an industry-wide event towards IT professionals, administrators, and then engineers and developers as well. So like all of the content is focused around what those folks care about the most. And then it's also a great time to engage with our customers. We invite every customer to come to this event, partners as well. So it's really like a great time to start networking and catch up with the folks that you've worked with remotely for years and meet them in person finally as well. So it's really like a great time to just also talk about like, what are all the cool product announcements that we have coming up and what are the developments that are happening within the community, talking about AI as well. Like that's going to be a huge part of the content piece.
It happens every year, this event?
Yeah, happens every year. So VMworld kicked off in, I believe it was like the early 2000s, and it was like maybe 1,000 folks. Now there's like 20,000 people that go to these events. So
wow.
It's grown a ton over the years, and it's also pretty cool to see it evolve from what it was just as VMworld, which was just really catered towards like IT folks. And then now we're expanding into, we need to talk to engineers and developers that are working on these modern app platforms, like the product that I work on. So that's the reason for that rebrand into VMware Explore.
I see.
Trying to be more inclusive of these different target audiences.
How much of your day-to-day these days is dedicated to these events?
I'd say right now it's 90%.
Whoa.
90% of my day is just what is the product roadmap going to look like leading up to this event? What are going to be the release items that we could talk about in these breakout sessions? We're also going to be having most of the folks on my team go as panelists and speakers to talk about all these cool pieces of content that we're putting together and helping them prep by putting together slide decks, putting together ways that they can be a great presenter, like all of the soft skills too, in order to be able to talk to customers very easily. We're also setting up like a white glove experience for all of our customers that are attending in person as well. So like our huge customers that have renewed with us year after year, we're setting up like custom workshops with them, which is like you were saying, Elisa, like a really great experience where you can just have like that one-on-one interaction, really like drill down into the major pain points that our customers are having, and then also understand like what is their feedback on our product roadmap, which is like super key to being able to keep innovating on our product.
Did you go online during COVID? Like what was the experience during COVID with these events?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for years it was in person. When COVID happened, they had to pivot and completely do it online. And that was the first year ever that they had to do any sort of breakout sessions or content streaming live. So it was like a complete overhaul. We were just kind of winging it as we went and trying to figure out what is the appropriate live streaming platform. You know, what is the format that we want our folks to watch us? Are they actually going to attend or not? And we found that maybe it was because it was during such a tumultuous time across the world that folks just wanted to connect. They just wanted to have a place where they could talk to their friends that they've known for years, that have been going to these types of events in one single space. And so we were able to successfully do a 100% live stream in 2020 and 2021.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, and it is a lot of work. And they had 100,000 people logging in throughout 3 days that we hosted the event. So everything pivoted to doing like a complete live stream, like the actual format that we used, like the live stream partner was amazing. Like nothing broke at all throughout the whole process. So, and then it also helped lend a lot of the feedback to now how we keep everything on demand. So before you had to go in person to understand what was happening in these sessions. And now we're able to record these sessions live at the event and then host them on demand afterwards, which is like a great marketing tool as well to just keep repurposing a lot of this content and make sure like the reach goes further than it used to in the past.
Do you charge for the on demand?
We don't. So we actually allow folks to register after the event and be able to go onto our website and access the content for free. Now it's posted after the event because we want to make it exclusive to the attendees that do pay for the ticket to go to the event. There's like early bird pricing as well to help incentivize more registrants that way. But we want to make it more inclusive and more accessible to the folks that couldn't attend, especially with all the budget restrictions that have popped up lately across the tech industry. So we found that it's been more consumable that way by making it ungated.
So the SaaS industry in general, you talk about budget restrictions, it's changed the picture dramatically. I guess more all hands on deck in terms of getting attendees this year and kind of getting the word out this year as compared to years past?
Yeah. I'm in talking with like other colleagues too about budgets and, you know, are you experiencing like T&E pullback too? It's just happening across the board. Like tech companies are pulling back on spend that they don't feel is necessary, especially with so many events being virtual now. They're trying to find ways to get their employees to attend things virtually, finding ways to like learn remotely. And it's harder to justify going in person to an event. So we've tried to help mitigate some of that pushback by creating really valuable content that we vetted and know is relevant to the attendees that are, you know, interested in coming to our event. We've also done like early bird pricing. So if you register early, you get like 10-20% off your ticket. Sure. And there's ways that companies are finding that they can send folks at a mass level. So if you have like 10 or more folks interested in going, you can get a discount that way too. So we found that registrants has been more positive that way by offering those incentives earlier in the onset, and then continuing to like socialize that across social media too has been like super key for us to getting the word out faster.
I went to an event with 40,000 women last year, and it was just so powerful to be with people, just to be there, like showing up with all these people who have the same interests as you. And then you're learning something new, too, about that's going to help you in your career and in your work and the products that you're using every day. Like, it's awesome that you can have that experience online, but you can't beat that energy when you're in person.
Especially for brand and for, building community. Are you all doing anything between these annual events? Are you doing like, are you expanding the Explore brand into pop-up events or kind of like semi-regular, smaller events around the world and stuff like that?
I agree 100%. Like the in-person community piece is so key. And VMware is kind of known for having like a lot of diehard fans. We have a few different community groups that we have set up over the years. One is called the V Expert Community, and it's kind of cool. Like, we put V in front of everything. It's like lowercase V, and then you add like the
whatever
down
the word is.
So that's like our cool little branding. So yeah, a lot of the folks that are V experts, we have like smaller meetups that are in person across different cities because our company's also remote friendly for the most part. That's changed a little bit under Broadcom, sending some more folks into the office. But for the most part, folks are also dispersed around the world. So for the folks that are, you know, in different cities. They've set up different meetups. They also have online virtual calls as well. So it's like a way to interact with each other throughout the year, also catch up with like their buddies. We have the code community as well, which is for the developer focus. So those folks are in weekly and monthly calls as well, virtually. So that's another way that we've tried to keep the spirit alive. And then those folks also are great advocates towards getting more attendees towards VMware Explore. So they like love to write blogs on their own. We use like a lot of that user-generated content to then repurpose into like, hey, here's like another reason that you should attend VMware Explore. So it's been really effective to nurture those different communities because it ends up paying dividends when you don't have all the budget in the world to pay for content that way.
Regarding your content strategy with the different groups that you have, like, are you specifically doing different messaging for different groups in your like overall advertising plan, or are you just kind of have some core messages that you're using?
So we do have target buyer personas that are part of like our overall marketing plan. You know, when we're starting off planning this major event, we first start off with like, what are the key objectives and goals that we want to achieve with this type of event? Is it lead generation? Are we trying to get more customers in the pipeline? Is it the goal more networking across our customers and partners and users? Or is it all the different cool products that are launching soon? So we really keep the goals in mind that we want to achieve throughout the event and leading up to it. And then we also think about what are the target audiences that we need to reach? So we go back to like the buyer personas of engineers and developers, and we think about what content would they want to see at the event. We have different groups that we confide in that are more of like our customer advisory boards, and these folks are willing to jump on calls with us, provide like really honest feedback that we've used to help with creating this content. So having like that really like small group that is willing to share their feedback with us has really helped with saving a lot of the time and energy and spinning our wheels, wondering like, are we on the right track right now? Is this what our customers actually want? When we can actually just go to those customers directly and then use that as like a sounding board and get really good feedback on our content strategy.
Are you doing a lot of that segmentation even outside of this event? So obviously you have the personas, and we've seen it a bunch. We're dealing with it currently in terms of selling to a developer is completely different than selling to an architect or a C-suite person that's making a decision. How much outside of the event are you kind of segmenting in terms of your content and campaigns? And are you building, narrowly tailored campaigns around, you know, some of these different segments?
That is a big part of my job. So we have three main buyer personas. We have the C-suite level, and then manager and directors that are the decision makers on whether or not our solution is cost effective, is going to drive like business impact. And then we have the platform engineers. So these are the folks that are like in the actual platform. They're managing the developers and overseeing that they're able to work effectively writing code. They're not being bogged down by all the administrative tasks. And then we also work closely with developers. So those are the folks that are in the platform as well, but they're writing and building the code for the applications. So those are very different personas that we have to tailor all of our messaging to. And in those different campaigns, we have set up like email nurture campaigns specific to if we wanted to target the C-level folks, that messaging is going to look very different, where they're more focused on what is the bottom line? How does this impact my budget? Platform engineers are more focused on, is this going to be effective for my development team? Are we going to also be saving money in platform and energy costs? And the developers are just like, do I have to do administrative tasks or can I just keep coding? So it really is different. We do tailor our messaging differently in like email nurture campaigns and blogs. We have different folks on the team that specialize in all of these different areas as well. So we also tried to tailor like a lot of like the blog content and webinar content coming from the folks that understand how these target personas speak on like a day-to-day. So it comes off as more genuine, comes off as more authentic.
It's really interesting how your background, like before having this role, like really informs what you do and how you do it today. Like thinking about your personas and placements with media buying, and then the like actual copy and strategy with social media. You have to think about all those things at just a giant scale now.
Right. I know it is funny how my roles have evolved, but it's all very similar. Like you said, like I was dealing with different personas in media buying without even realizing it sometimes, and tailoring the messaging depending on what stage of the buying funnel they were in as well. So, and it's the same with social media. You know, when you're writing copy for social posts, a developer, you know, might speak differently than a C-level folk that might be interested in more of like reading an actual report versus a blog. So it's really like something that you have to keep in mind as you're running these campaigns.
It was VMware the first B2B experience you had and like fully jumping into the deep end way? Because I saw you, or had you done some B2B on the agency side and so forth?
Yes, VMware was the first role that I had jumping in like the world of tech and the world of B2B. Before that, I was working with Elisa at an agency in Fresno, and I was doing media planning and buying as well as like some social media strategy for smaller to like mid-sized businesses. And then I also worked at an agency based here in LA called Horizon, and I was focused on B2C media strategy and brand planning. So when I pivoted to the world of like full-on B2B in 2020, it was definitely different than the B2C world, but a lot of like the strategies, like you can use it as templates and frameworks for anything. It's just talking to the target audience slightly differently and on a more technical level, I found.
And on different platforms, all the different nuances of the platforms and so forth.
We recently had an B2B company come to us and say that their last agency was not really effective with their sales materials and other videos because they were so B2C focused. And like, even though the principles are the same, there are some very important nuances to acknowledge when you're doing the work and talking to the people. And if you don't understand it, your audience will know it.
Mm-hmm. If the marketing team and the product team don't understand exactly like what makes the target audience tick, like it becomes very clear, like you gain like distrust with your audience. So you have to know your product inside and out. You have to understand who your audience is. Having those smaller communities help with that too. Having like user feedback and surveys also help as well. But coming from the B2C side, you have to like really be on it to understand everything from the inside out.
You mentioned surveys. So some of the survey work you're doing also, it informs not just the marketing, but also product and product features and so forth. Is that right? That's a completely dramatic shift from media buying for liquor or sneakers, right?
Yeah. Because when you're like B2C, it's like you're just trying to get people to buy that product, right? Like in those one or few situations. Now, when you're like building a product that's millions of dollars and there's lots of different folks involved in that decision-making process, you can't afford to get to the end and realize, oh, we were not going in the right direction. We should have done more user feedback. So we do rely on surveys within like our installed customer base, within, you know, potential customers as well, to get like dedicated and really focused customer feedback on our product that helps with like the future roadmap items as well. And then like future content that we can create out of that. So we really lean on like who are the users of the product. We also have like an open source solution as well. So it's also good to understand like we have our enterprise customers that are using our product, but there's also a huge open source community that's using it on the day-to-day as well. So it's good to understand, like, what is the overall community's opinions and outlook look like for the overall product? And then what does it look like if you were to actually have to pay for this product? So we use different survey types. We like to start off with like really easy questions to just get the customer engaged and actually follow through with finishing the actual survey. And then it follows through with like more of like those open-ended and thoughtful questions. So we can really like hook them through the end.
What kind of stuff are you doing for community building and kind of developing outside of the conference and so forth? Are you doing like public Slack channels or, you know, other tools to engage and kind of connect people?
Yeah, we rely on Slack communities as like a great place because like a lot of our audience is already on there. Like developers love using Slack, so do engineers. So we started like a public Slack channel and we've invited all of our customers to join. We post like regular new content in there. We also do like custom polls and things like that too. Like, hey, like this is another way that we can get like that user feedback without doing like a full on like survey link. And that's been a really great place to just like get quick feedback that we can then feed back into like our sales leads as well. And then sales teams that are also like working on these types of problems like day in and day out with our install based customers. We've also found that using LinkedIn groups have been surprisingly like a really great way to just get a hold of the decision makers. So developers are more so on Slack. But we started doing a LinkedIn groups where we're inviting like our dedicated customers to join. We do surveys in there as well. We also post blogs and webinars that are coming up and we invite them to those as well. So that's also been a really great way that we've been able to like get them to join some of our webinars and podcasts as guests because they're seeing like, oh, wow, they're doing a lot. And they're engaging in these groups because they're already on LinkedIn checking, you know, their own personal accounts. So that's been another surprising, great and free tool that we've been able to leverage a lot.
Is that a relatively newer thing that you're investing in LinkedIn groups and getting the word out that way?
So it started off as some of the open source community was starting to experiment with it. And then we decided like, hey, we can just post in here directly and tailor it as like, we have these product updates, but keep it like very high level and not make it sound like it's a marketing message getting pushed because there's like that fine line between like, we don't want to come off as too salesy, but we also want to share like, these are all the cool things that we're doing. So we've been able to also join like open source groups and join them from like the perspective of like, hey, we're a user of this product as well, but we're also like, we work at the company too. So there's been like a way that we can experiment with interacting with different users to also like get more folks to be interested in the product that may not also be current customers. But then we also notice that some of the customers that are like part of like those smaller groups are also part of that. So we've been able to kind of extend our reach that way as well.
We get like really obsessed with types of content to produce to like reach different audiences. And we think about what each persona is looking for. And then also, like you said earlier, what's trending, what works. I was like looking up LinkedIn. They were saying like last year, carousel posts were the thing. But this year, it's like short form video. What are the ways that you're like, what are the different types of content that you're having fun like exploring?
I love that question because, yeah, it feels like as soon as you get the hang of like, okay, we're creating like all these videos, it's like, never mind.
Yeah.
Pivot to audio right. only. It's like, So some of the things that we've been experimenting with, honestly, like podcasts. Podcasts have been huge with like our audience because you can make it as long as you want or you can make it as short as you want. You also get the option of doing video or audio only. So you're reaching folks that are on different platforms. We've been able to like leverage it across social media as well, making like a long 1-hour podcast into like 5 or 6 different shorter clips.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of like 10-minute clips of podcasts. Have you guys played with that at all?
We haven't gone to the 10-minute mark, but what we are doing is we're using like those clips in like blogs as embedded pieces of content. So we know like people are skimming blogs for the most part, but if they see like an image or a video, they're going to click on that most likely and start listening to at least the first parts of it. Like, for example, if we had a podcast that was recorded by one of our technical marketing managers, we'll then write a blog about what we talked about in the podcast to help with like our SEO efforts as well, post it on our website. And then we have a blog created out of a podcast. We can use the snippets to embed them within that blog too. So, you know, when you're strapped for budget and when you're not able to use like demand generation campaigns, that's like another great way that you could do something organically.
Yeah, I think we're going to do that with ours. Like, you know, we just started this podcast and we haven't, you know, we want to use this as our own test. We have clients that we're doing podcasting for, but you know, when it's your own, you can play. And if something fails, it fails, where it's not like, you know, it's not a big deal. But the snippets and blogs, I think, is going to be our next thing. So, I mean, we're at a different scale than you are.
No.
7 full-time people? That's about what you have, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to start. And it's not a huge lift either. So we found that our SEO has actually increased by like a ton when we start doing that. And it's also a way that you can get like customer references that way. You know, especially in our industry, it's especially hard to get like financial service customers or like those highly regulated industries to agree to do case studies or to say like, yeah, we're going to give you a public quote that you can put into this blog or case study. But if you get them to join a podcast and talk about your product, there's like loopholes and ways that you can get quotes out of it that way. So there's creative ways that you can, you know, repurpose some of that content.
What are you in terms of customer, like customer stories and so forth? Are you doing a typical kind of a, you know, customer like featurettes, videos and so forth, or anything creative on that front?
Yeah. So coming up at Explore, we have about 10 customers so far that are going to be attending. And these customers are going to be presenting at breakout sessions. They're going to be attending workshops. They're going to be talking about like real world use cases of how our product has helped like impact the bottom line of their business. So it's been really impactful to see, you know, really how it's like working in the day to day. One of our customers is a huge credit card brand. I can't say their name publicly, but pretty much all their apps run on our platform. And if a credit card swipe doesn't go through, it would mean like one of their apps is down. So in order for their product to like work day in and day out and like process billions of transactions, like our app platform has to work. So they've had like zero downtime in 2 years. It's been amazing. And also to see like, wow, this is like super powerful, you know, on a mega scale. So we're working on ways that we could talk about like real world use cases at Explore. We're diving into creating case studies with these customers. So we have customers that are like in the financial services industry, a ton of those. We have a lot of customers in transportation and travel, a lot of airlines, also like consumer goods, like Dick's Sporting Goods is one of our customers. They created like the curbside app program through our platform when the pandemic was happening and got it up in like 2 days. So that would normally take like 2 months if you were using competitors or trying to do it on your own. So there's been like really cool ways that we can like turn these into like customer references that we can use in like webinars and blogs and white papers, and then just like repurpose that at VMware Explore as well.
We've been doing some work with one of our clients with their B2B events. And when they have a big name company, I mean, people might go just for that, just to hear their story and how the product is being used. And we've also done live podcasting, and we try to get those like hot ticket guests, you know, at the event. And then those are really popular too, because people like get to be a part of the live experience, and then they can go listen to it later if they want.
Yeah, we actually did that for the first time a couple months ago. We had a smaller customer meetup in New York. It was called Cloud Foundry Day. And it was like the open source community that uses Cloud Foundry, which is like the technology that's built on our product. And we also had the enterprise customers as well. So we had two customers that agreed to be on our live podcast panel. And, you know, one was an open source customer, which it doesn't use our product right now, but they could do it in the future. And so we turned that into like a blog and included those snippets as well. And folks were like really excited to like be there for the first, you know, live podcast recording. And I think we're going to do it again in the Germany event. So yeah, folks really like to be part of like something new, something that's happening live as well.
Well, we do have tech clients who are probably in your space who are our clients and listen to this podcast. Is there anything you want to share about your event, like details, if they have, you know, people on their teams that they would want to send?
Yeah, so the event is held in Las Vegas, August 26th through the 29th. And then if you can make it to Barcelona, which who wouldn't want to go to Barcelona, November 4th through the 7th. And we're really welcoming customers, partners. If you're a developer, engineer, interested in any VMware product, interested in how you can advance in your career as well, there's a lot of sessions that are going to be tailored around that. And then on a business unit level and product level as well. So we're going to have, you know, breakout sessions, workshops. We're going to have hands-on labs, which is where you can actually use the product, you know, in person. We're going to have a lot of folks on hand as well to help out with tutorials. There's going to be a dedicated area where you can go to code-related sessions. So this is going to be great for developers to network with other developers and also learn about like all the cool new things that people are building using VMware products. And then there's going to be like a lot of parties, a lot of networking events. I hear that there's going to be something at the Sphere in Vegas.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, I want to go to that.
That's on my bucket list, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, we got a lot of cool things going on. I think there's also going to be Jimmy Eat World. I believe they are going to be the performer at the event. So
hitting all those elder millennials.
Right, they know their audience. So you can register now. Tickets are available through our website, and hopefully I can meet some of you there in person.
Mia, thank you. You gave us such an inside track on everything that you're doing. And I know it got my wheels spinning for not just other clients, but for myself. And I hope that our listeners get inspired too, because you are like a live case study here. And it's really exciting to hear all the things that you guys are doing. And then on a personal level, I love to hear it for you. I think it's really awesome. So thank you so much.
Aw, thank you, Lisa.
B2B Creatively is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta with help from Mather DeLeon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you like what you hear, go follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, where Lisa, Corey, and the rest of the team are dishing out tips all week long. Or maybe check out storiesbureau.com. Sign up for our newsletter, and that'll keep you up to date on all the latest trends and best practices in the B2B creative, design, and marketing worlds. Oh, and of course, follow us on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform to get more creative convos like this delivered straight to your feed every month. That's it for this one. So until next time, thanks for listening.